Presence Ministries International presents In His Presence with Tim King, recorded live during the Transmillennial National Conference, June 11 to 14, 2003. We take you now to Colorado Springs, where the program is just now beginning.
Today I'm going to be talking about some things that are very near and dear to me, and hopefully to this movement as a whole. And I want to work through my notes slowly. It's not a real long message, but I think it can be a fairly profound message, or one of import as far as putting together an integral worldview, how we see things and what we do with that. And it will let you know where we're moving ahead as the board is determined and we sort of set our shoulder to the plow, so to speak. So this week we've been looking at Jesus and Paul, two men, two ages, one story. And in all that you've heard, I trust that you will take away with you at least this one thing, and that's that we're now fully in the Father's presence. And if you take that one thing with you, you won. You won. Eschatology was always about God restoring humanity's relationship to himself. So I would like to wrap up this conference by speaking about into his presence, centered in God. Now, if you read our biography, you know a little bit about what our logo symbolizes. It's about the presence of God, center stage within the midst of mankind, in progress, active, co-creating, on the move, partnering together for a better tomorrow. As large as the universe is, there still is not enough room for both God and humankind to take center stage. It is critically important that we, each of us in our lives, become centered in God's presence. We can't be in the center of the universe, but we need to be centered in his presence. And when God is placed at the center or the core of life, the center of our universe, then we can become centered within our world, within ourselves, as beings who carry this very strange combination of soil and spirit. That's hard to live with, isn't it? Because a lot of days the soil comes out instead of the spirit. Only then will we be prepared to become all that God has in mind for us to be. This conference and everything we do in the future is all about becoming what God calls us to be. Now, when we think of a compass, we think of the four important coordinates of north and south and east and west. And one of the interesting things that I find about a compass is no matter where you are, no matter how far you've traveled, you will always still have the four coordinates of north, south, east, and west. And in a way, coming into the presence of God, the one who is now all in all, is very much the same way. No matter where you are, how far you've traveled, there are still four very important coordinates that must be attended to. When God is at the center of the universe, and we are centered in his presence, just as we are, then we are aware of the coordinates, not just of north, south, east, and west, but of the four vital social coordinates that make life go around. We're aware of the human to divine, the human to human, the human to nature, and the human to self relationships that keep us centered in our world. And again, this is a world filled with the presence of God. Now, in charting our course, it's important that we keep our eye focused on each one of these coordinates. Because if true change is to occur in our world, then each of these critical coordinates has to be kept balanced in keeping us centered. Now, what's going to become evident to us as we move through this morning is that when one or more of these coordinates is ignored, then we stray off course, and inevitably it creates a void that ultimately gets filled with a counterfeit solution. And I want you to keep that in mind, because we'll give an example or two of where the world is because we have not navigated with an eye on these four crucial coordinates. Let's talk a little bit about our modern versus pre-modern, or post-modern, world. We hear a lot about living in a postmodern world, and maybe you're wondering what that is, exactly what that means. These are good questions to ask if we're going to talk about an integral worldview. We need to understand these things. First, let's begin by talking about our modern world. Now, when we see of the world that came out of the Enlightenment in the 17th century, particularly France. And that has led to what I call an intellectual crisis across all lines in our world today. Now, the modern world was a reaction against the earlier period of the Renaissance and its love, its focus, and maybe even its obsession for antiquity. Now, let me break this down a little bit more. With the mindset of the Enlightenment, what that brought us was an approach to our world based on rational thinking regarding science, technology, imperialistic governments. Stephen touched on a few of the ramifications of that. A basic drive of humanity to have dominion over itself, nature, God, and the world in general. So man becomes, in that model, the measure of all things. Now, much of this thinking is a result of the influence of René Descartes. How do you use a philosophy professor over here? I always say, you skip the first S and you take the second one. Descartes, who had widely considered, or is widely considered, to be the father of modern philosophy. Now, look at what he believes and how that sort of began to turn our world. What was it that got us to the place that we're at today as a world? There are two remaining legacies that are basically left over for us to deal with. One is called a subject-object split. I'll define it in a minute. And the principle of doubt. Principle of doubt being that we were taught rationally to think and doubt everything but the doubter himself. I think, therefore I am kind of concept. But then, of course, the inevitable happened where people started to doubt the doubter himself. And so everything started coming apart. Well, let's talk about that subject-object split. It comes from the idea that to find truth, all verifiable data must be objective. In other words, he taught us to objectify everything in the world. Now, while this is of some help at some points along the way to discovering truth, for instance, we wouldn't want to go the opposite direction where all truth is subjective. We wouldn't want to go that extreme. But, nonetheless, it has led to even objectifying ourselves and especially others around us. We see ourselves as objects. We see others around us as objects. And a main consequence of seeing our world, ourselves, and others as something more akin to a collection of objects is that much or most or many of life's mysteries have been reduced to scientific explanations. In the process, the personal other has also disappeared as he, we know him as God, has been described as an object or dismissed altogether. It's also left us in a position where we find it easy to dismiss humanity itself because we objectify everything. We see this in the three worlds, the Atlantic, the Pacific, and the Indian. The Atlantic, we're born to thrive. The Pacific, they're born to survive. And the Indian, they're born to die. But we've objectified it so we don't feel it personally. We don't feel that that's something we need to take seriously and deal with. The idea of progress was so interwoven into this new dominion approach of man related to his surroundings that people such as Marx and Nietzsche even predicted the death of religion. To them, it was somewhat obvious that moderns would recognize that religion was not so much forward-looking, but like the Renaissance, was caught up in antiquity, in pre-modernity, or fantasy, or just story. Well, how did the religious world respond to this? How did they step up and make their case to this modern mind? Ironically, with a modern mind. It cut loose faith from its original setting in antiquity, jettisoned the first century, and replanted the symbols, ministry, and great works of Scripture into present history, and the results of that move have been nothing less than disastrous. And much of that is what we're dealing with in trying to get people back into that original setting. Well, let's break this down even more. The modern world, says Ted Peters, is the critical world that has torn apart the relation between the human mind and objective reality. Modernity has broken our naive sense of oneness with the whole of the world, end quote. In other words, since the task of the theologian is to speak to the present situation, and since the present situation is modernity, and since modernity is obsessed with not wholeness, but with fragmenting and deconstructing, religion itself has followed the same path. It has become fragmented and deconstructed. So it no longer sees itself as building toward a wholeness in the presence of a God who is all in all. Rather, now it sees itself as hanging on to its fragmented piece of a world, spinning apart and having as its only answer a God who is removed and transcendent, coming soon to replace this world and give us another one. It is here that we see where religion has played a key role in a breach, especially between the human-to-human coordinates of our compass. So what do we have? One, we have a gospel that has been hijacked from its first century roots and has been transplanted today in modernity. Two, we have a view of God that does not place him in the center of the universe. It is a view that has God removed, distant, displeased with things on earth, and aiming to do something about it. And that something will happen with a bang. And it could be this week, so y'all need to send in your checks. Well, it works for the televangelists. The result is that this scenario conveniently allows man to resume his position at center stage. Man takes center stage. Specifically, those who see themselves as the true people of God. Does this sound like any first century groups to you before their destruction? As a result of not accurately seeing the fulfilled and integral story of redemption, what we have is a breakdown between all four quadrants. There's a break between the human and divine, the human to human, the human to nature, and the human to self. We live in a very fragmented world. Religion has done little other than reflect the mind of modernity rather than the mind and the heart of God. So why is it such a problem? Well, let's talk about specifically some things that make the world go round. Basically, there are four entities that form and provide direction for the world in which we live. There are governments, corporations, universities, and religions. Do you see any of these that you would consider as having their act together? Do you see any of these that you would not consider to be highly fragmented? I would submit that the same thread of fragmentation running through modernity is running through each of these as well. In governments, corporations, universities, and religions, what we have represented is the disciplines of politics, economics, education, and spirituality. These are the core elements that must be impacted if we're going to bring about an integral change in our world. Now, a good question to ponder is this: which one of these most influences the others? Probably a good case could be made for each of them. I think most of us would agree that economics seems to dominate politics. That seems to be a self-evident one. Education is certainly key, as it educates those who go into governments, corporations, and religions. And then who could argue that religion or spirituality doesn't or at least shouldn't play a role in each one of these as well? Well, for our purposes, we believe that if humanity can find the answer for the four quadrants of relationship between the divine, human, nature, and self, then once again mankind becomes centered, enabling a certain wholeness to return, overcoming the primary inertias of our world that we just looked at, the inertias of politics, economics, education, and spirituality. Well, here's the $64,000 question. Max asked the $64 million one. I will ask the appropriate $64,000 question. Can it be done? The answer is, we better hope so. Because for the first time in history, mankind's mental ascent in this rational world of modernity has created the ability technologically is so far advanced of an internal development that our world is at great risk of literally destroying itself. You see what's at stake? I love it when people say to me, what difference does your view make, you know? It will take all the fragmentation of religion, economics, politics, all the things that make the world go round, with the fragmented modern mind, and begin to pull it back by putting God back where he belongs. Now, these are the core elements that must be impacted to bring about integral change. a good question to ponder is, how should we go about this and what will happen? Well, let's talk about the postmodern mind in light of, one, the transmillennial view of Scripture, and two, the presence movement, all of which presupposes an acceptance that God really does work through His people to bring about change. Therefore, we have wasted neither time, money, nor energy in attending this conference. If you know me at all, you know one thing that makes me tick. I am a task-driven person. Probably because my father was a taskmaster. We are not going to organize a conference that leads us nowhere. We are not going to organize a ministry that leads us nowhere. We are not going to organize a movement that takes us no place. All of these are the things to which we must give ourselves in prayer and disciplined study and thought. And all of these things are worth buying into and giving our lives to, or we have forfeited to the fragmentation of the modern mind. It's that serious. Now, if the modern mind deconstructed and brought about fragmentation, the cry of the soul from that which is postmodern is, give me wholeness. Somebody come and put all of this back together, not the least of which is the reestablishment of the presence of the divine. And for all the things that I hear religion railing against postmodernism for, and some of it is legitimate, of course, at least they're crying out for a return in some sectors for the transcendent to come back, bring back the divine. Well, the transmillennial view is about the transformation of all things. It's not a view that, it's not a concept or a word that we just dreamed up because it sounded neat. It's about transformation. It nails perfectly the fulfilled gospel because in that God transformed all things. It's not a take it or leave it term. It's vital to countering the very place we find ourselves in the world today. It might not be in 50 years or 100 years. That's fine. But today it is core and it is vital. It's about recognizing that God is all in all. So we become centered by recognizing God as being central. We become integrated by seeing that God is integral to all of life. And this is what modernity has forfeited, and it is that for which postmodernity yearns. And that is great news for us. Because every one of those classmates that were in here yesterday from that university is a much more tuned in and akin to the postmodern mindset than you and I of modernity are and probably will be till the day of our death. And it is that generation that is rebelling against the fragmentation of all things. That's good news. Every other millennialism is catastrophic. Transmillennialism alone is constructive. All pre- and post-millennialism fall in with a horrendous battle and deconstruction of humanity and earth as we know it. Isn't that cheery? All three sisters belong to the modern mind against which our world is starting to rebel. Premillennialists love the idea of a hell on earth tribulation period. Postmillennialists talk a good game about their supposed golden era, but even that collapses into anarchy and calls for God to pull down the curtain of history. They can't even run out the string. It's just 1,000 years. All millennialists, like their name, are negated from having the victory of God taking place right now in this world. So the time to make our case, we believe, could not be better. The postmodern mind is calling for integration, not a world that continues disintegrating before their very eyes. Here's the question. Who will step forward and offer a clear alternative to the future? I like that logo up there. Can we really do that?
Yes.
Can we offer an alternative to the future, just the people in this room? The sons and daughters of Joseph and Mary, Nazareth, Bethlehem, from small places in Texas where you take dirt roads to your house. Can we really do something? We're either going to do something to make the future happen. let the future happen. And if you just step back 10 years and see how much we've let the future happen in 10 years, maybe you'll see why we're so serious about trying to get some handles on how to package this greatest story of the world. That's the kind of thing we have to be thinking about. Well, let me first say, we have to realize that we are ambassadors, each one of us, for the greatest story ever told. Do you believe that? Are you here because it's the greatest story ever told? Is there power in that story? Is there potent power in that story? Am I the only one that kind of asks, are we really tapping the power of that story, or is there something we're missing? Do you ask yourself that? I hope so. Because as ambassadors, it is not our lot to be combative or debative or sectarian or to demonstrate that we're somehow brighter because we understand this fulfilled message and others don't. In other words, it's going to do us very little good to proclaim the greatest story ever told in ways not so great. Second, I believe to make headway and to be heard, we will have to be both ecumenical and ecumenic in a deliberate walk of intentionality. Let me define these terms for you. To be ecumenical is to work between those of like-minded faith. In our case, that would be those who confess Jesus as the name above all names. We might also refer to this as working within the denominational world. What we've seen so far in the arena of fulfilled prophecy, I believe, is a miserable failure to break free of the modern mind of rationality and an unwillingness to form relationships. Instead, each faith tradition has come out of their box long enough to grab hold of parts of this message, only to quickly scamper back into their boxes. We have to realize that the starting point for a constructive future is to come out of the box into the full presence of God, and to come out together into this full presence of God. When we work together toward understanding the integrity that comes with seeing all things fulfilled and God is all in all, only then does the light of a brighter future begin to shine. The transmillennialist is ecumenical in the sense that we desire to transcend labels on boxes and work to bring the world back together in helping it heal from the fragmentation wrought by modernity and its strictly rational mind. Now, presently, in my opinion, the preterist world, in all of its flavors, is reflecting the schema of modernism by incessantly debating and dividing themselves over things such as the nature of inspiration, God's providence, divine foreknowledge, the Genesis creation account, atonement, salvation, sanctification, eternal security, the destiny of the unevangelized, the Lord's Supper, baptism, charismatic gifts, women's role in ministry, the nature of hell, reconstructionism, theonomy, and a host of other issues. Is there any wonder why religion is not the guiding light among the other coordinates of our compass relating to politics, economics, and education? Who are they going to listen to? Many lines, but not many of them very deep. As Albert Einstein once said after a phone conversation with me, our problems will not be solved by utilizing the same mentality that created them. Well, in moving past the modern mind of fragmentation, the 21st century needs a great work all of its own. How many are up for a great work in the 21st century? Are you up for that? God is all about great works, and He's all about great movements among His creation. The greatest story ever told has as its focal point the great work of Jesus Christ. The greatest story ever told has as its focal point the great work of Jesus Christ. And the great work of Jesus Christ has as its focal point the Great Commission. And the Great Commission has as its focal point that God will no longer dwell in boxes made with human hands. That is fragmentation overcome. And so what do we have? We have the call of this Great Commission through a great work of Jesus about a great God who doesn't live in boxes that brought forth a great commandment that said, you love God, and you love people. And it begins, and it ends there. And no fragmentation of modernity can step in and justify not walking with God and your fellow man. And this ministry and this movement is one of inclusivity. And we will meet with anybody, anytime, anywhere on our dollar to make reconciliation if we have wronged them, if we can do anything to reunite with them. This ministry doesn't play Bible games. This is a movement to overcome the fragmented world so that at least the coordinate of spirituality will have something to say to economics and politics and the universities that are educating the people of the world. And if we can't be about that, it's time to fold our tent and indeed go home. Regardless of our background, let's walk together in a great work in the 21st century. So we must be ecumenical and work like leaven, a constructive message of integration among those of semi-common belief, but we must also be ecumenic. To be ecumenic is to look out into the world at large and learn to be an ambassador for the greatest story ever told among different religions. Now we're going beyond denominations of those who see Christ as the name above every name. Now we're going to the Buddhist and the Hindu and the different religions of the world as the ambassadors of this message to get rid of fragmentation. It would serve us well to see that each of the world's religions has come about in an effort to fill perceived voids in how the greatest story ever told was or was not being told. Did you catch that? World religions step in the voids that are created when a truth story leaves out parts of the story. Because we're all made in the image of God and it resonates with us when things are not right or something is lacking or deficient. That's why in this conference we try to run the gambit with the head, the heart, and the hand. We want great teaching, but we want great times of worship. That's what it's about. Well, I'm ready to preach. Well, in short, until the story is told in its completeness, offshoots of what is being left out will always be and always have a ready audience. For instance, philosophically speaking, we're adherents of theism, the belief that God's separate from the world, yet actively involved in it. But when the modern mind gets a hold of this, it begins to overstress the separateness of God, and this leads to deism. Deism is the belief that stresses God's uninvolvement and inactivity in the world. He's removed, he's distant, he's far away. Deism is a perfect system of belief for the modern mind. It more easily allows man to take center stage. We might also add that, incredibly, deism is the favored choice of many in the fulfilled prophecy world. They see God as having finished his work and then withdrawing. The problem with this is that every single page of Scripture testifies against that. Other than that, they're right in line. We serve a God intimately and intricately involved in the world in which we live. Always has been, is, and always will be. Well, all of these views have consequences. Some of them merge into very lethal and destructive combinations, and I'm going to address one of the coordinates that is most left out. You're not going to hear this at any conference on eschatology. By way of a case study, let's just use one coordinate example of how this all breaks down. The damage done by the dominion theologies of religion and catastrophic views of millennialism, along with the deistic philosophies of science and modernity, are everywhere present in our current ecological crisis. The earth has been viewed as a possession to be used, with little concern for the unprecedented damage that has been done against it in the past century. By and large, the religious community has been silent to this ecological crisis in its preoccupation with the belief that this world is not our home and that we're just passing through and that soon it will all be destroyed and that it's the divine plan of God to give us another one anyway. So we might as well get while the getting's good. And so we plunder our planet. Well, what does this do to our compass? It removes one of the main coordinates, that of religion, allowing the coordinate of economics to destroy the land, large sections of rainforest, pollute the atmosphere, on and on in the name of dollars and cents. And this runaway economics holds power. power over our coordinate of a self-serving government could tend to turn its head as even more devastation is allowed to take place in the name of energizing economic downturns and fiscal responsibility. So in the process, the coordinate of nature remains fragmented due to the prior fragmentation of politics, economics, education, and religion, all of which join in keeping mankind off-center. Meanwhile, our coordinate of religion sits with arms folded, proclaiming that surely these are the last days. In this scenario, which is our current one, man is separate from the divine who is off somewhere else, waiting to come and intervene, to come and destroy. The result is that man continues to be separate from man as the cruelty of economics keeps third world countries oppressed. Man is separate from nature as he no longer works within its boundaries, but instead sees it as a possession to be looted. So at the end of the day, is there any wonder in all of this mess why it is that man feels so separated from self? As we are beginning to see, ideas make a difference. I guess I should ask, do we really believe that ideas make a difference? Maybe I'm making an assumption here. I doubt the greatest story ever told, that began with Adam in the garden, and the command to kill and keep it, the Hebrew word shamar, or tet, had in mind that someday this creation would trash it, while crying out to God to come back and replace it. How did we get there? Well, as a result of a mistold and misrepresented theism that fights reason with reason and continues to fuel a modern world bent on self-destruction, the pendulum swing is quite predictable. We have the rise of religion seeking to counter the absence of God by overplaying his presence. In an effort to address our nature coordinate, pantheism sees God and the world as the same thing. Thus, they work to protect both. Many theists who really are practicing deists, God's way with, scoff at the thought. Anybody ever criticized tree huggers? I'm raising my hand. I'm just telling you to raise yours. Very insensitive, this coordinate for a long time. It is no laughing matter to those who resonate with the words of the Apostle Paul in Romans 2, that through the creation and through nature, God is easily seen and all are without excuse. In a chapter entitled The Wild and the Sacred, author Thomas Berry weaves the following poetic summary. I love this. He says, we might reflect on the sense of the wild and the civilized when the dawn appears through the morning mist. At such times, a stillness pervades the world, a brooding sense, a quiet transition from night into day. This experience is deepened when evening responds to morning as day fades away and night comes in the depth of its mystery. We are most aware at such moments of transition that the world about us is beyond human control. For it is out of the wild depths of the universe and of our own being that the greater visions must come. The natural world demands a response beyond that of rational calculation, beyond philosophical reasoning, beyond scientific insight. The natural world demands a response that rises from the wild and conscious depths of the human soul. End quote. The very thing you felt when you stepped on that porch and you looked at that mountain. Of course, everybody knows that's Mount Zion. It's a local call if you want to talk to God from Colorado Springs. Well, what a great response to the deist who sees God as removed, or the economist who sees the world as a possession to be plundered. The deist sees God as way away. The pantheist sees God as part of everything. And to strike a balance into this mix stands the panentheist. This person believes that the world is a part of God, but certainly is not exhaustive of his nature. He is in and beyond the world, but intricately a part of the world. Well, the panentheist is trying to balance the over-transcendence of the deist and the over-eminence of the pantheist. Again, all out of balance, because the story isn't being told correctly, and it's leaving voids, and people step in. God's far away. No, he's a part of the earth. No, he's both. What is he? A lot of questions going on in the world of philosophy, as well as the world of religion. And so it is that a movement to recover the presence of God is born. A great work to properly frame the presence of God in all of its transcendent and immanent nature. transmillennial because it's about transformation. But it's pre-modern in that it seeks to recover the greatest story ever told in its original setting, from Genesis forward. It is modern in that it uses all of the rationale of a cohesive story and breaking down its component parts in order to better recover the storyline as it really is. And yet it is postmodern in that it seeks to integrate humanity by returning God to the center of the universe so that all of life's coordinates might fall nicely back into alignment. Here's a key point. Only when the greatest story ever told is told in its fullness will the incompleteness of religions, philosophies, and denominations be put to rest. I want to say that again as you look at that on the screen. Only when the greatest story ever told is told in its fullness. And I don't know if we understand it in its fullness yet. That's what we're pushing toward. But only then will the incompleteness of religions, philosophies, and denominations be put to rest. We have to believe that the power of God, in its fullness, when recovered, and the story told as it is, will overcome any other thought. We have to believe that. And we have to be lucid and seminal in the way we take that message to the world. And we have to be sold out to that message, because remember, we all raised our hands saying we want to be a part of a great work, not an okay work. And the reason why it's the greatest story ever told, and not just a decent story once told, is because it touches all humanity every bit as much as the rainbow and the Noahic covenant cover all humanity. That's the way it works. The power of the cross and the fulfilled covenant of Christ is that it alone can bring together the relationships between the human to divine, the human to human, the human to nature, and the human to self. And when this begins to take place, then the things that make the world go round also begin to fall into alignment. Well, let me just say here that some of the things we briefly laid out this morning, we hope to be laying down in a worldview book that should be done this time next year. We also hope to touch upon this briefly in our book, Battle for the Future. You see, we have to make our case within the context of an integral worldview. Leading with eschatology, if you've been sleeping, I want you to catch this. Leading with eschatology only works for a small segment of our world. Have you noticed that? We must lead by demonstrating the point of the story by answering the so what that follows the story of our eschatology. We must demonstrate to the world that things have been put back together and that we can have integral lives that lead to integrated living. And that is the point of the greatest story ever told. And I have never seen a presentation of why you can't divide Matthew 24 lead to integral living. But it could if we understood the coordinates of our compass. Now the question becomes, what's the best way to advance these ideals, to present this, the greatest story ever told? Is anybody thinking about this? Do we have a conference so a few guys can stand behind a microphone and everybody can clap? Or you can get away on vacation? Why do we have conferences? Is there anybody sitting back, looking at the whole world, daring to have the faith of saying to God, here am I, come use me? Yes. Everybody in this room should be that person. Yes. How profound I was struck as a child when I read Francis Schaeffer's book. And in the foreword of it, he wrote, to eat, to breathe, to beget. Is this all there is? Chance configuration of Adam against Adam or God against God? Come, Christian triune God who lives, here am I. Shape the world again. That is the philosophy of a movement to recover the presence of God that dares to say, not because of ego, but because of humility, I humble myself before you, God, and if you want to use me to shape the world, then use me. And if you want to use every person in this room, use them, because all of us stand before him, do we not? Saying, come, Christian, triumph, God, and this, here am I, shake the world again. And if we can't say that, then we'll never get to the point where we stand behind all of this stuff we're talking about and say, how do we do it? How do we integrate the world and integrate our lives? How do we do it? Probably by blowing out people's eardrums and tongues. We feel it's time to make a strong move into the field of education. What I mean by about this is that it is not our intent to become bogged down in ecclesiology, how you do church, or in starting another denomination, or infringing upon yours by debating that laundry list of items that we mentioned earlier. We're not going to out-religion, nor do we desire to spend our energy in the jot and tittle quagmires of religious debate. We have to get this. All theology must lead to a God beyond the pages of Scripture and to as integral a worldview for living as possible, or it is a worthless and meaningless pursuit. It is our intent in Presence Ministries, the Presence Movement, to take the next step in traveling from the coordinate of spirituality to the coordinate of education. It's time to tell and retell the greatest story ever told. It's time to embrace and share and love and integrate within a world of fragmentation. Well, as far as we have presence in our limited efforts, we plan to continue doing this through publishing efforts along with the utilization of emerging technologies such as the internet, DVD productions, webcasts, and eventually an online institute. We need you to take advantage of these tools and spread the message as if there is no tomorrow. It's in the interest of education that we will continue to probe the biblical meaning of Scripture. It is not, therefore, our intent to spend our energies trying to bring about another reformation within the church. As Leonard Sweet says, reformations are man-made and limited. Transformations are God-ordained. What we need is a transformation, and it's the coordinate of education that we believe has the best opportunity to impact the other three coordinates of politics, economics, and spirituality. Each of these coordinates need to be educated as to the fullness and completeness of the greatest story ever told. By not attempting to reform religion, perhaps we can gain the critical mass needed to educate the world to constructive rather than catastrophic futures. We need you to walk with us if all of this is going to happen. We need your time, your focus, your attention, your creativity, your partnership, your financial commitment. If you're financially committed to us, thank you. Can you commit some more? If you're not financially committed to us, can you begin to commit to us? We need your prayers. We need to build intentional communities. We need people who will consider moving here, retiring here, or joining us however it is feasible within your present life setting. At the same time, we desire to walk with you in building an intentional community wherever you are. So in conclusion, if there is one thing we hope you've learned this week, it's that fulfilled prophecy is only the starting point for what God has in mind for us to do. The best way I know to define the task of the Presence Movement is this. If everybody believed our theology today, we would only have just begun. Keep an eye on your compass. Stay centered by keeping God central. Now as we depart, let's turn to our spheres of influence as ambassadors of the greatest story ever told. And let's educate the fragmented world as to the God integrated all things. Thank you.